Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
This is Dmitry Samarov from Chicago, Illinois. And I love listening to Vish Khanna's Creative Control because whether he's talking to a favorite musician or actor of mine or someone I've never heard of, it's as if he's introducing me to a new friend. And the way things are going, couldn't you use a new friend? Listen now.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Yorgos Sluris, Jim White, and Guy Picciotto are each gifted musicians and friends who each originally hail from Crete, Melbourne, and Washington, D.C., respectively. Over the past 10 years, Picciotto has been engineering and producing music made by Yorgos and Jim, who perform truly remarkable live shows under the name Sluris White and have released 5 stunning albums to date. Their latest record is called The Forest in Me, which is available in Australia and New Zealand via Remote Control Records and elsewhere via Drag City on April 14th, 2023. To celebrate this momentous occasion, George, Jim, Guy, and I connected for a talk about things like how they began to make this new music together at the end of 2019, and then, while far apart from each other, throughout the most isolating time of the COVID-19 pandemic, their collaborations with the filmmaker Rebecca E. Marshall, how Jim and George were each compelled to learn how to record their own instruments and work with Guy to create The Forest in Me, Sluris White's curious way of capturing music and their fascinating relationship with time, a disruptive thunderstorm in Crete that may or may not have impacted this very conversation, how Jim and George and Guy view Guy's actual role in Sluris White, a new way to pick a song, future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, which is the primary source of revenue for all the work that goes into this podcast. If you like the show and you want to support it financially, that would be nice. You can do so at patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thank you. Plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee. respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 768 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented George, Jim, and Guy from Sluris White, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, George. How's it going?
Good, Vish. How are you doing?
I'm well. Thank you so much for asking. Where in the world are you today?
I'm in Crete, in Arkhanes village outside of Heraklion.
It is so lovely to have you join us from Crete. That is, sorry, here it's, what is it, like 1 p.m. What time is it in Crete?
9:10.
Oh, okay, good. So you're not super late. Not super late. But I appreciate it. It's okay. Good. It's good. It's very nice to see you again, George. Thank you so much. Jim, where in the world are you?
In New York.
Ah, how are things going in New York for you today?
Not bad.
Okay, good. Nice to see you too. You're keeping well? You look good,
nice to see you,
if I might say. It's nice to see you on the thing. You look great.
Thank you. Yes, I just got back to New York a few days ago from playing some shows with Bill Callahan.
Oh, lovely. Congratulations on that reality. Reality? Am I saying that right? I know it's backwards. I think it's called Reality. That's a lovely record.
If you can say it backwards, I'm impressed, but I have no word on the official line.
I should figure that out. No, it's lovely. You're playing, as you know, Jim. I always love your playing. It spoke to me right away. I was like, oh, this is clearly Jim. I didn't have all the notes. So anyway, that's great. That's good. And Guy, you're here somewhere. Where in the world are you?
I am on the other side of the park from Jim in Brooklyn, in the bunker underneath my house.
It does look bunker-like, if I may say. How are things?
I come out on occasion. I come out on occasion, but not often.
Do you and Jim meet in the park frequently that separates your places?
We do. Yeah. Yes, we do.
Pigeon feeding. What kinds of stuff do you guys do in the park?
Go for a walk, talk.
Yeah.
Walk and talk. That's great. That's great. And things in Brooklyn are pretty good these days, Guy? How's it feeling there?
Yeah, quite well, actually. Yes. It's been an exciting week. I saw Jim play with Bill Callahan like a week ago, and then I also saw the Unwound reunion show here in New York. That was phenomenal as well. And I'm going to see the Mesetics on Monday, which is my former bandmates, Brendan and Joe. So it's a very active cultural moment here in the city.
That's lovely. You're getting out and about. Is that sort of new for you, or have you been going to shows this whole time that we've been, you know?
Whatever? No, it's occasionally I would go, but I'm kicking into a slightly new gear, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good for you. And Unwound and Soulside, all these bands coming back, I've noticed too, which is kind of fun, I would think. For you, is it emotional, I assume?
Very emotional. Coming back with great gusto.
Yes, absolutely. That's great. Well, listen, speaking of gusto, I'm so happy to have you all here to talk about this wonderful new record, The Forest and Me. I want to begin by framing this the best I can. I believe, and I'll go to Jim on this first. Generally, when you three convene, you're always in the same room making records together. Jim, is that accurate?
Like, largely, George and I, the three of us are in the same room often for some, and then sometimes George and I are in the same room. And no, it's all variations, I think, right? Is that right, everyone?
Well, I meant specifically for recording purposes. The albums we've heard thus far, it's the three of you.
Yeah.
Is that right, Guy? You're all kind of together.
I mean, before now, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we were.
Yeah.
The majority of the records were recorded. Actually, we've done, I guess, three different studios, but all of us in the, you know, either here in this bunker that I'm in right now, or we did one record in Melbourne together in Australia, and we did another record
in Queens.
In Queens. So we've done a few different places, but generally, yes, with all of us in the same room.
Right.
But this record is the first one, you're correct, where while some of it was recorded in the same room, not all of it was, and there's quite a few of the tracks were completed in novel formations that we had never used before. Yes,
absolutely. Yeah. So I just wanted to clarify that fact because that was my understanding. And so from what I understand, The Forest and Me began with Jim and Guy. You were tracking drums together. And what I read was late 2019. So before this, whatever we're going through. So I don't want to leave George out here, but I want to begin with that. Guy, that was obviously right away. That was a kind of a different thing. What was the intention behind you and Jim just getting together and playing, you know, tracking drums without George there?
I actually went back and I looked at like, because the history of the last few years is very tangled in my head. Yeah. So I was like, I better go back and try to revisit the sequence of communications that would help me remember this whole thing. But at some point in 2019, I think Jim was just in town and we were like, why don't we just, you know, fool around and see if we can come up with some, you know, stuff. Like, let's just start recording drums. And so that was the first thing that happened in 2019, towards the end of the year. And then very quickly at the beginning of 2020, things got, as we all know, very, very fucked up. And my wife was supposed to be starting a tour right when the pandemic hit. She got on a plane, came home, immediately was sick with like probably one of the earliest cases. And she was in isolation. And soon things got very, very squirrely. And I was looking at these old emails. And at a certain point, Jim is in Australia, George is in Crete, and I'm in here in Brooklyn. And we're sending emails to each other that reading them now just seem like science fiction. I mean, they're just like, you know, illness counts. And when the lockdown was moving and kind of it started in New York and then things eased up here, then suddenly Jim was in lockdown and then George was in lockdown. So it was like we were all kind of in communication. But at the same time, we also had a bunch of projects that had been starting to unfold. Like I'd started realizing I'd forgotten about this. We had a bunch of different film projects. Jim's sister, Anna White, had worked on a film called In My Father's Garden. And so that became something that we thought we might be able to work on while we were isolated from each other, just like find some music that might help with that project. And then there were other film projects. And we started thinking like, oh, maybe we can use this time to start working on soundtracks and different stuff. And then we had some of this solo drums that Jim had cut with me when we were just like, basically the way we would work was we would just like throw ideas at each other and just start tracking drums and then start editing them and messing around with things. But it was just, you know, just like play, you know, just trying to see what we had. So we had all these different balls in the air in 2020, film projects that we were working on, some of this stuff that we'd already started working on. And so we just tried to find ways to maintain some kind of semblance of creativity with each other. And I think the big thing that happened was, and it became the name of the record, was a movie called The Forest and Me. Jim and George had gotten in touch with this filmmaker named Rebecca E. Marshall. Mm-hmm. And she had seen, I think, Jim and George in 2019 play in Athens. And she was really blown away by their music. And she had been working on this film called The Forest and Me. And she got in touch with the band and asked if they wanted to work on music for it. Mm. So that became another thing for us to kind of throw our attention into. And that became a really interesting way of working because we were all looking at visuals from the film and then communicating together and trying to assemble music that might support that. And so basically we had all these different projects and ways of working. And then Jim and George both started learning how to engineer for themselves. So our emails are really funny. They'll be like, you know, horrible dystopian pandemic nonsense, then some mundane stuff, and then technical stuff about engineering. And it was very interesting, you know, the way it all worked out. So those are all kind of the different threads that kind of came together for us to conceive of this record.
So it's conceivable from what you're saying that this album could have been a soundtrack for something, or it could have been something else. When you and Jim started tracking, like Jim, was your understanding that you and Guy got together and maybe this is a Slurs White thing? Maybe it's not. Like maybe George will be involved, maybe not. Was that what you were thinking at the time?
Yeah, we were not saying we were just trying stuff out. Like wasn't thinking what to do with it.
And that's highly unusual for this configuration, I would think. You go in with intention. Like George, when you guys get together with Guy, you're planning to make a record, a proper record, right? For Slurs White, generally, is that how it works?
Yes, we often are recording and we don't know what will come out, and we have the material, and then we go through and we see, you know, Guy does a lot of the choosing, let's say, stuff, what he likes. He sent it to us, and when we are in the same room, we often start to make recordings, and we don't know what, you know, how we can use the recordings in later.
Yeah, so I don't think we, like, I know when I was in some bands, you like go and you go, we're making a record from the 20th and 21st of November, you know, and I guess we have done that, like when we book studios. But then sometimes we're in New York and we're both in New York and we go to Guy's and like, let's do some recording, you know.
Mm.
That's the thing. We have like enormous amounts of material that we have generated over the years. And when it comes time to making a record, it's less about this is the recording that is the record. It's more about what do we have that coheres together and makes a statement as a record from this material that we've amassed. It's more like of a magpie approach where you're just pulling from all of these sources. And that's because, you know, the band, like we still have some of the material that's on this new record is stuff that we tracked, you know, before some of the other records, you know,
yes.
And some of it is brand new. So it's always like a idea of finding, and sometimes it's very mysterious what fits in, like what is the message or the meaning or the kind of the inner skeleton of the music that holds together to make it the album. And we always know, you know, we always know when it's correct, you know?
Yeah.
So you're right. It could be considered as, but that's why it's not a soundtrack record in that sense, but even though some of the songs did stem from soundtrack work.
Well, and I've tangled with Jim on these topics before with other people. Jim's been on the show a bunch, and I get into like composition versus improvisation. From what George is saying, there's not necessarily a fixed intention. There's going to be some elements of in the moment playing. You two in particular, George and Jim, you tend when you, I don't know if you're still doing this, but you used to tour very hard. And I think things would probably, Jim, is it safe to say songs would develop as you were playing on the road as well?
A little bit work on them, but like more like we go into, like oftentimes we'll go in the studio with Guy and we'll be like, we'll just throw some stuff down. It'll be like, it won't be even what you think. Like you might have some ideas in your head, but then a lot of their stuff is just like, do it then, you know?
Yeah.
Or, you know, I don't know. Like we've talked about before, I don't know necessarily what George is thinking. I don't know what, I don't even know if he's played that before or not, you know, or if I just start playing something. But I want to add something to what Guy was saying and what George was saying. Cause sometimes I find like a playlist of an old record that we made, you know, like that we didn't put out, you know. But, you know, every record we haven't done, you know, and they're good records, but I feel like every record we've made, we've done a new set of recordings, and in that we found the kind of directive where to look and find the other stuff. Do you know what I mean? So that's what that sort of becomes like the instructions for looking back through the catalogue of recordings.
Yeah.
Right, Guy?
Is that?
Yes, that seems really correct. Yeah, because, I mean, there's some songs. I mean, for example, we have on the new record, we have a song called Red Wine, and we have another song called Missing Heart, which are two of, have always been, since the very minute that those guys recorded them here at my house, have always been some of the most beautiful pieces of music that I've ever been involved with. And certainly with these guys, like even as we were tracking them, literally, even as they were occurring, seemingly out of nowhere, I just was like, oh my God, what is happening? You know, just so excited by them. And yet they didn't make it on previous records for reasons of like the directive, like that Jim is talking about, didn't call for them in the right way. So it was, you know, but this time they did, you know, this time it was like the right moment, the right time came for those songs to be folded into the mix, even though they were, it's like the newer material that Jim is talking about from this record, the songs that were used for the Forrest and Me film or for some of these other projects, and then some of the newer pieces of music that we had started to assemble. It kind of called back exactly in the way that Jim is talking about. Yeah. So,
and then you know, we sent George a bunch of stuff, Guy and I recorded, you know, and then George picked up on some of it, and some of it we tried hard, like what, you know, have you got anything for this, you know, and some the ones that worked, you know, they're here, and then the other ones aren't, you know?
I want to follow up with George on that process in a moment. But just to clarify something that I think I understand correctly, you did some tracking. Jim, you did some tracking with Guy, but then you also obtained some recording equipment. Is that right? And did some tracking yourself, recording some drums at in Australia.
So the backstory of that is, like, you know, as that George and I were on tour in like Venice when we first saw the masks appearing. You know, and later on we found out that the COVID was coming. We were in all the places where it was coming. I think it was someone else as well, somewhere else in those early days. But then we ended up in Australia. And actually we did a few shows with Bill Callahan, and we did our own shows, and then everything was unraveling. And the last show got cancelled. And then, you know, my dad got sick basically, and the show got cancelled. And then all the other work sort of was disappearing. And then George and his daughter, like, the airport in Athens was closing down, and they were like, we're going to the airport now, we're running for it, you know. So I decided to stay in Australia to help my father. So I did that for a few months in the countryside, and then I was like kind of stuck there, and then I went back to Melbourne, and they announced a really big lockdown. They announced a curfew and this and that, and I was like, shit, you know. I rang up my friend's studio, who had a studio, and said, can I rent some microphones off you? And he goes, yeah, come take them all. We're shutting down at midnight, you know. Went down there and got the microphones, went to the shop and bought the interface. I never thought I had the patience or anything. I can't remember exactly. I guess it was just like, okay, we're going to try and probably talk to you about it, Guy. So then I thought, okay, like, I really didn't know how to do this at all. And then, as it happens, this label in England asked me to help with something, and I go, well, I've got the equipment, I just got it today. You know, I don't know how to use it. And they go, oh, here's this name of this guy, Howard Grenells, in Montreal. And he would have been engineering this record, but now he's going to, if you want to, he can. So I had a meeting with him every morning and every night, you know, and with Guy. And then I was in this house, you know, with, like, you couldn't go more than 2 miles or something. You couldn't. It was all this stuff, and I learned to record. Yeah, I learned to record, and then eventually, when the time came and they wanted their microphones back, I bought. You know, I found which ones I liked, and yeah. So then I went down this whole track where I could record, and I bought. You know, I brought that back here too.
I kind of love stories like that. That out of the necessity of isolation and whatnot, people were picking up skills.
Yeah.
So now, Jim, is it a burden for you to know how to do this?
So, you know, I did a lot of recording. You know, it's like if I had to do music, if that was my only relationship to music, recording in the house by myself, I was not sure how much I would do it. Yeah. But as part of the whole thing, it's actually pretty satisfying, and, you know, it's a different kind of – it's different. It's not really like the joy of – it's just really different. But, yeah, but now I can do it. It's good.
Now you can do it.
Yeah.
That you could do it with for anyone, probably. That's great. I mean, I think that's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, George, you are sent. The structure of this record, this new record, is a little mystifying to me. And and it's good that we're all gathered here, because hopefully I can figure this out. But, George, my understanding is you were sent these drum tracks probably via the internet. What did you first make of this process of, like, I assume you would try to play along to them? Like, how did you actually approach collaborating with Jim and his tracks from afar?
You know, we came back from Australia, as Jim said, with my daughter, and we just, when we arrived the next day, it was lockdown here. And the following days, I thought, you know, it was a relaxing time, be home, and the phone wasn't ringing often, you know, rare, quiet outside. It was very nice. The beginning of that time was very relaxing here. We are in a countryside outside of the village. And when this, you know, I had the first mails with the sound, I've got a home studio here, some things. You know, I've got a quite good sound, and I started listening to the stuff. It was very inspiring, beautiful bass and highs and hi-hats, and all the sounds was really beautiful. And I thought, oh, yeah, this is fantastic. I'm going to do this now here. I'm going to be here and start thinking and play on these recordings on the drums. And I have all a bunch of different instruments here. And I, it was good time. I tried to experiment with sounds of different instruments, not only in the lute. It was no singing, you know, at that time, that moment, which is we, it was something new again for Xylurus White. And I sent the first stuff I sent to Jim and to Guy to have a listen to see what I came on with. Guy said, oh, George, this sounds like we are in the same room. I remember that. And then I start thinking about that, and I find that a very, you know, attractive, you know, yeah. To think we are in the same room, Jim in Australia and Guy in New York and me here. And the way we communicated was, you know, very different way as we work usually. We have done this in the past sometimes, very rare, but we did. And yeah, stuff start develop and sound. Guy was sending me rough mixes, and we were talking about the sounds and the instruments and the mood and the feelings of this and that. And then the forest in me came on, and we start work on that film too. So the whole thing inspired me. The new way to work, the forest in me, the lonely times. Me here, Guy in Australia, in New York, Jim in. So I started to discover and see other things, beautiful sounds. I loved it.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, it was a bit with the mood of the quiet outside here and the times in the garden with more relaxing and more forest in me, you know, than loneliness of the time.
Didn't one time we watched the movie individually and played, not knowing what the other person had done, we both watched it and played once along just from the start to the finish. Then we ran them next to each other, right? Right, Guy?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, Vish. Yeah. It's like it didn't all start with Jim supplying a bed of drum tracks and then George overdubbed it. It was maybe some songs were like that, but other songs would start with George playing something and then we would react. And then other times, other times it would be like one of the tracks I sent a loop of my kid playing violin on top of some drums. And then that became an idea for George to riff off of. And then another time the film was really interesting because all three of us had something we could like, since we weren't in the room together, the film became the room and we could all watch the film and then they were reacting to the film individually.
Then
like, for example, Jim on one of those tracks might send me five playlists of different approaches to a section. And then George would send me five liras, three lutes.
I see.
All totally different. And then I would sit there with the stuff and then I would be like, you know what I hear? And then I could take parts of the drums and parts of the liras. I didn't know what George's intention, if they should all be up or only one of them or half of them. But I would just try to find a musical thing, a conversation between the drums and the film that made sense to me. And then I would send it to them. And then they would come back with notes. So it was this weird,
We
were existing in this, you know, space above the world that we were somehow all, you know, together, like referencing, but tracking in isolation, but somehow still in conversation in a really intense way. And when I went back and read the emails, I kind of had forgotten that there was so much variety. Cause you know, like Jim might do a pass, which was like frenetic. And then he might do one that was very ambient. And then he might do one with different kind of instrumentation. And George would have his different instrumentation that he was doing. And so for me, it was something really novel to be able to kind of like try to thread a needle or like weave it together in a way that was still musical and still honoring what they were trying to to present in reaction to the film, or even if it wasn't a soundtrack project, if it was just a song that we were working on, something that was ultimately musical. And what was so cool was that, you know, I was very, very used to like the sounds of them in this room. So it was really cool when Jim started engineering himself, hearing the way he hears his own drums. Mm-hmm. And he became, we had a lot of like back and forth about the microphones and the setups that he was using. And what about his drums themselves are the things that are like, there's aspects of just the sound of the way Jim tunes his drums or the way he strikes his drums and stuff that are just really moving to me. And there's stuff about the way George plays the lira and the lute, you know, instruments that are still new to me, even though we've been working together for a long time, but things that are just so evocative and so beautiful, different techniques that he has that, like, he has this one bow which has some bells on it. So it would have this shimmering sound that sits above the track in this certain frequency of these high bells coming off the bow as it's being played across the lira. So cool, you know. And then, so there's all these different things to kind of react to, and It was really quite interesting. It didn't have that kind of antiseptic feeling of like, you know, here's a drum machine, put something on top of it. It was much more conversational than that.
I really want to say that I appreciate that clarification and that distinction, Yi, like, because I'm kind of riffing off something I read and trying to piece this together. And George, I do want to ask you, because you invoked the forest in me and you also invoked not singing, I do want to follow up with you in a moment about those two things, because I think it speaks to the emotional tenor of this record. The fact that you had this title to work off of and then you chose not to sing in this time strikes me as interesting, and I want to get to that in a second. But Guy, just to follow up on everything you just said, compositionally, I'm still, despite your amazing elaboration, I'm still trying to piece together what this means. You were still sent a lot of things. And then was the what we're hearing on the record, obviously you went back and forth, but was that your ear saying, okay, I think this goes here, and this is how this fits together as a composition, so to speak, on this record? Or am I misreading that or misunderstanding
that? It depends on the track. Like, because again, like I said, there's some of the tracks are tracks that we recorded together in this room pre-pandemic.
Oh, right, of course. Right.
So those songs are just, you know, material that like Missing Heart, for example, as far as I know, they had never discussed it together. They just suddenly started playing this thing, and I scrambled to turn on my, you know, equipment in order to capture what I could capture. And it was, so that's different. But then other songs are the way that you just described them. It really is. That's the thing, is there's no real true formula for what this is. It's not it's, you know, some of the songs stemmed from the film work. Some of them stemmed from pre-pandemic. Some of them stemmed from initial ideas Jim had. Some stemmed from initial ideas George had. Some stemmed from me combining elements and creating a song and then presenting it to them and saying, does this, like the one that started with the drums and my kids' violin loops, ultimately the violin loops disappear because George, he absorbed the idea or the spirit behind what was happening, but then he took it to a different place, a more, you know, he kind of expanded on it, and that's the song Latin White, which for us felt like kind of a breakthrough in terms of finding just new terrain and new sounds and stuff like that.
Well, Nightclub also sticks out to me. I don't know if that's a song that you feel compelled to talk about, but Nightclub sticks out for me in your catalog thus far, and I wondered how that came about. Jim, do you have any insight about that particular song?
Well, that's from another film that we were working on, right, Guy?
Yeah.
And also, but yes. Isn't it also the bones of it is actually from another different film before that we were playing live too, right?
Yeah.
You guys need like a day timer, an organizer. I don't know how you keep track of all this stuff. I mean, Guy, as soon as we started talking about this band many years ago, I think, Guy, you said this to me. Like, you're just building upon every session. Some stuff hasn't seen the light of day yet from the very first time you got together. And so, some of it's still... Oh, yeah, we've got the... what do you got there? What is it? Well, you do have a day timer.
So this is probably one-third of the amounts of notes I have on Xylorus White. Like, each one of these books that I'm showing you, this one here says, you know, Xylorus White, Box Hill, 2018, and it's just pages and pages of notes describing the different tracks. And when I say hundreds of tracks, I mean literally hundreds and hundreds of songs and folders.
Yes.
So I have these notes and I go back through them. And a lot of times they're very productive in terms of finding song titles, because things that we're discussing in the moment while we're tracking, I'm writing it down and it will end up becoming evocative enough to be used as a song title, because it's like, so that is what it is. You know, I think I said it before, there's a stream going by and, you know, we're like dipping our hands in the stream and pulling stuff out of the stream.
So you're the collect. So you, because of your notebooks and that strange bunker you exist in, Guy, you are kind of the the memory bank for this project. Like, you've got it all. I mean, Jim, you must encounter things that Guy has sort of excavated and been like, "Oh yeah, that thing. I forgot."
Oh,
do you get that? Do
you? Are you kidding me? Yeah. Like, no. Like, yeah. I would only know 1% of what we did if it was left to me.
That's
because, like, we go one time we were in Iceland and we're like, you know, we just went to the studio one day and we made like five takes of like 20 pieces of music or whatever. And, you know, we're lucky if we can remember, oh, that one. Remember there was that one version of that song that was really good. And I mean, I know that lives at Guy's house, that session. I don't know if Guy's ever been through it, but, you know, because it's Guy's house, it's probably on my computer. It's on my hard drive somewhere, but I got hard drives. I don't know what's in there.
Yeah. So when you and George re-encounter, I don't know how else to put it. When you re-encounter something you did 3, 4, 5 years ago, and then you're on the road, is it a matter of relearning it? This is where
how do you mean?
Jim. Well, Jim, you're going to be mad at me. I'm going to invoke the composition versus improvisation thing again. Well, I just mean, like, it sounds to me that Guy is scrambling to hit record. You guys don't even exactly know what you're going to do. So there's some measure of improvisation. But then as you repeat an improvisation in public, it gets a form. It becomes compositional.
Oh, yeah. And Guy will do some recording and then Guy will go, "Hey, check this out." You know, and then, "Oh, like, that's really good. That's great." You know, then that's a song, right?
It is, but then when I guess I'm just making the distinction between the magic that you guys capture in the studio together, which sounds magical. I'm not even using that term superficially or anything. It sounds like magic is captured, lightning in a bottle. Then you're supposed to go on the road. Does it even occur to you? Having seen you many times, I don't get the sense that you're that precious about this has got to be just like the record. It's not that kind of project. However, when you, like you say, are surprised by your own idea, I'm sure you're like, "Yeah, let's try that. Let's try that again." And all I'm getting at, and this is maybe a little silly, are you trying to recreate the magic, that lightning in a bottle, when you're on stage with the same tune? Or is just completely... do you see where I'm coming from?
So, say, Pulling the Bricks, the first song on the first album, that's like just a moment, right? If I remember Guy and George, like, that's, we just did that then, right? Yeah, and that's a song we played hundreds and hundreds of times. And, you know, it moves as songs do when you play live and with people, they change, you know, they change over time. But it's like, yeah, definitely going for this. And, you know, it's like, hang on, we've sort of lost something there. Let's go back and.
Yeah.
It's more about the feeling. You want to have the feeling and, like, maybe you lost it. Maybe you thought the feeling was something else. And then at some point you're like, oh, no, like, maybe let's move it back this way a little bit, you know.
I mean, I'm someone who appreciates artists who don't treat. I appreciate artists who feel like. The recording is just what happened that day or that week, but the song, as you go live, can evolve. I feel like that.
Yeah.
Is that maybe the spirit of where you're coming from in this project?
I mean, for me, I always come back to the idea that, you know, you get good at maximizing the moments of, I think this is something we talked about one time, like, you want the spirit of what, if you record for a day and you find this piece that's like got the spirit that's really good, and then Guy says, "Hey, what about this?" That means, then, you know, Guy's named it, right? And he's shown it to us. We can go, "Yeah, that's great," you know. Or if he edits it or adjusts it, you know, then that's, I mean, I don't remember what we did anyway.
Yeah.
I'm like, "Hey, is that what we did?" It's like, you know, yeah or no. But then at the show, you every song's got to be good, right? Every song's got to be the moment. So you got to get really good at making the moment in every song.
Yeah, but also I think it's important to remember too, like, particularly with this band, the music can come from so many different sources. Like, the music can be pure improvisation, or it can be improvisation based on a folk medley or rhythm or idea, or it can be an assemblage of things that I have like threaded together from different things. There's so many different ways that this band approaches each song that it's not formulaic or it's not programmatic, but it's also, I think, reductive to say that there's no songs here, because certainly there are songs, and to us they're hits.
And also we don't go, oh, song three is like, we're going to improvise, you know. We might say, well, let's go from this song to this song, and have this little transition, and that might be a little bit open or whatever, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I hope I didn't mischaracterize anything. I'm just trying to get – it's a riddle. This band is a riddle to me.
This record is – this record's so much more – it's quite different, you know.
Yeah.
Like even like thinking about the nightclub one, right, because isn't that a song we were doing, you know, we're playing for Jem? That from there at all?
It's a bunch of different things that have been very, very heavily processed. Like that one was inspired by a film. Like it was a brief to soundtrack. This is a movie that ultimately didn't come out for us, but the idea was to create. So, I mean, to be quite honest, like a lot of these times I have to actually go back to the Pro Tools session itself to see what the elements are that I'm using to. Like that one, for example, like Jim said, it's a combination of a bunch of different things from different times that have been processed in a different way. But it held together as an idea or as a song. And one thing I think is so interesting about this record that I think makes it different maybe from the other four is that I think it is the one that's probably maybe George can say also, it's the most divorced maybe from some of the folk idiom that the band has worked in the past. But also what I love about this record is I was talking to Jim about this the other day. I've been listening to like early Johnny Cash Sun recordings and early Roger Miller records. And a lot of his songs, you know, from back then, they're like a minute and 35 seconds long. Yeah. And you're like, how can this song be a minute and 35 seconds? Like, and yet it has everything you need is in that very concise, beautiful, you know, song shape, you know? And this record has some songs that are, you know, fairly long and others that are incredibly short, but they're complete ideas, you know? 100%. And that's what I find really exciting about this record is like, you can have songs of like, it really, I feel like it's almost like a discursion on time itself. And music and time is something I think about a lot, you know, particularly coming out of hardcore where songs were like 32 seconds long.
Yeah.
And then you have songs, you know, once the CD came on the market, you'd have things like, you know, Jerusalem by Sleep that are like, you know, 40 minutes long or whatever it was, you know, with massive movements. And I just love this idea of like in music, time becomes distorted and changed and shaped. And I think this record is one of the things I most like about it is the way it holds together as a complete statement as an album, like listened to in its entirety as one thing, but then also in its microcosm, like in its instances of the small sections within it. So that's just something that occurred to me.
No, and that's fair. And I mean, part of the distortion, like, again, if we think back on the inception of this, rather not the inception, but the way you three have operated, there is been a blurring of time and space the whole time. Like, you're capturing everything and then it resurfaces. It doesn't necessarily come out within the context of when, I mean, within a year or something of the context of when it was captured. That's fascinating in itself. And where I'm kind of thinking about what you've done here is in the context of a pandemic is that you guys are maybe more customized to work this way, the way people have had to work. Maybe it's not the same anymore, but this kind of remote work, sharing of files, digging up old ideas and trying to bring them into a contemporary context. There's a lot of temporality kind of being messed with in just Sluris White, if I may. Guy, does that resonate with anything you just said?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And it really was looking back on how, like the thread in the creation of this record, it really did make me realize how outside of time a lot of it felt, you know? And it's so interesting to me now to think about a song like Red Wine. Now I only think about it in the context of this sequence of songs because it fits in so beautifully, you know, and it sits there so nicely with this stuff. But I mean, you know, like Jim says, we have playlists for records that don't exist, and Red Wine was on many of them, you know? Yeah. So it's like, we're always kind of like, you know, we're always in conversation with each other. And it's funny. I was trying to think, George, when is the last time you and I were literally in the same room? Like, I feel like we've been working so hard together for so long, but when was the last time I actually was with you?
Before the COVID.
before the comet.
When was that?
Yeah.
But
18.
But what was it? 2018? No, it can't be that long. Is it possible? Jim, do you remember the last time we were all three in the same place?
Before Australia.
Huh. Mm. Okay.
Well, we never forgot about red wine because every time we were doing anything, we'd go, hey, what about red wine? Will that fit on?
Right. So, yeah, this. I want to ask about Guy's actual role in this. I know we've established it, but I find this dynamic fascinating. I promised George I would ask him a couple of questions, and I want to stick to my word. First of all, George, when you hear this phrase, the forest in me, I want to begin there. What does it mean to you? Because in the material I was sent, you have a very interesting quote about making this record. Actually, shall I begin by reading this to people, George? Do you know what I'm referring to?
Yeah.
Shall I start? Okay. The quote I have here is, every harmonic is a fallen tree trunk that I climb over. I'm stepping in muddy waters in the woods or coming to a clearing. That is part of the journey I take, whether I'm playing music with an audience or recording alone. It's a journey around the forest of my inner self. That's how I see it. So first of all, George, that's very lovely. Was that prompted by this title, The Forest in Me, or is that just something you've thought for yourself?
Well, the title, The Forest in Me, that inspired me to think that direction. No electricity here right now.
Uh-oh. Oh, yeah. Is George?
I thought he was thinking.
Can you guys hear George?
He's frozen.
But maybe I can just say real quick until George comes back is like just to give you a bit of an idea of what the film itself is because it hasn't come out yet. The film, The Forest in Me. But it is it's three stories intertwined in a documentary form and like one of the stories is about NASA astronauts preparing for Martian living by living in a pod on a volcano in Hawaii. And then another story thread is about a woman who lives by herself and she's 71 years old and she lives in the Siberian forest. She was a part of some religious exiles who were like kind of forced out into the Siberian forest and she lives completely by herself and surrounded by wreckage from Russian army bombings and stuff like that. And she just kind of has a very rural life. And then the overarching theme of the movie is a letter to the filmmaker's son talking about themes of human existence and time and loneliness and all these things. And so these three stories kind of are all combined and that will ultimately be the film, The Forest in Me, that hopefully people will be able to see at some point when Rebecca is able to complete the movie. But it's interesting because we made little video clips for every song on this record. So for every single song on the record, there's going to be a short film made by different filmmakers, including Jim's sister, Anna White, Jem Cohen, our friend, made three films. Rebecca, who made The Forest in Me, also made some films. And what was really interesting was seeing how the filmmakers reacted to the music and how common themes came up in all of the different clips without us, giving any kind of instruction about what to show. So a lot of the stuff George was talking about in terms of like the natural world informing the way he plays and the way he thinks about his music is in the films that were made by the people reflecting on the music that we made. So it is kind of this weird, it's a hall of mirrors in a way, but I do think there has always been something about this music that has, even from the beginning, has always made me think about the natural world and about weather systems and about time and all those kind of things. It's just in the music, you know?
I watched a video of someone night swimming, I believe. Is that a way of putting it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's for Latin White. That's made by Rebecca.
Yeah, Rebecca.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Beautiful video. And you're right. I mean, this music does conjure the natural world for me, but it also, it's interesting to me that this is instrumental, and that's what I wanted. Just so people know, we seem to have lost George. Hopefully he can log back in because I wanted to ask him about this too, but maybe Jim and Guy, you can provide some insight as to why George's voice is absent here. And the circumstances are what they are, but do you think there's anything else to it? The fact that I'm used to, I love hearing, I don't even always understand, if I may be candid, what George is saying. I ask for translations of lyrics if they're not provided to me in the album liner notes. But was it a conscious decision to have it be a sort of vocal-less record?
Yeah. Well, I remember, Guy, that, you know how we were talking before about like doing new recordings and then finding the kind of theme of it. And, you know, what I noticed was that, you know, we didn't have the Greek folk themes apart from what, I mean, inexplicably connected with George, but, you know, in terms of the melodies and stuff. And we didn't have, you know, we didn't have any words singing. And then, so that became, I felt that became part of the instructions of what we were trying to build, you know. And we actually took out a lot of the sort of build-ups and the tension and release as well, you know. Do you remember that, Guy? I remember there was a discussion about it, and we talked with George about it.
Yeah, I guess it was, I mean, for me, it doesn't even seem that intentional, but now it seems like it must have been in some way, but I don't remember like a lot of heavy discussions about it.
I remember George saying, like, should I try singing? And I'm like, I think we should have it like this, you know, we should keep it.
I mean, there are some tracks that end up in Forced in Me that Rebecca did put vocals on, and that's why some of these mixes are different from what's in the film, because like he ended up having Apollonia from George's daughter sang on some stuff, and there was some vocal stuff here, but I do think
she sang on the music we did.
Yeah, but I think it's only used in the film, not in the mix that we have for some of these songs. But but I do think there was like, I felt like we kind of to me what felt most deliberate was cutting the cord with the traditional music and the just having it be more reactive in terms of, like, obviously George has his vocabulary that's in his style of playing and out of his history, and that's where he comes from. Same with Jim. You know, Jim has his history and his style and his vocabulary from where he comes from, and perhaps I have a vocabulary that I'm unaware of, but maybe it exists. But, you know, this was like more of a, like, it felt like a step into a different space or a different way with less of the grounding that it had been there before. You know, it felt more of a, does that seem right, Jim? Like a step in to a different place.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I was really interested to see how it was without those things, you know. I thought it was, and then once I saw how it was, like, I really liked how it was going, and I was also interested in to see how it lived in the world, you know, like that in that different way too, you know.
Yeah, I think George's voice, whether he's adapting a folk song or what have you, like it does, without it, I don't know, it just changes the context for me. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. Maybe it's an obvious thing, but...
Yeah, does it still sound like Lewis White?
Yeah. Yeah, mission accomplished on that level. It does still sound like it, but it does. That's an interesting question. Does it sound like it to you? Given how sort of fractured it was put together, does it seem like a normal?
Yeah,
Slur's
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a different. You know, it's different, and it sounds. Yeah, I mean, I think all these records, they're all, you know, all of our records are, they make sense together, and they're different. You know,
but so much to me depends on the sequence. Like, really, I mean, I think that in some ways, I still operate very, very much in an analog album kind of way of thinking of sequences and sides. And I remember making a sequence of this to give to Jim to play on a road trip. He was driving to Detroit, I think. Right. So I said, like, this is what I hear as being the way that these songs communicate with each other, and the spacings and the way the songs work in conjunction with each other and the flow. That to me is so key. 'Cause when I put on this record, I don't just listen to, like, I like to really, people say it takes you on a journey. That sounds incredibly hack, but my feeling about this record is it takes you on a journey, like, quite honestly. I feel like that's what
it does. Yeah.
And maybe because it's divorced from singing and language, there's a space that opens up there for your own internal narrative, you know?
It does do that, absolutely. And I think it's beautiful. The one thing I will try to get to quickly that I find fascinating is that, and Guy and Jim, you would maybe appreciate that traditionally when a band or an artist makes a record, usually, they might record a couple of things that they don't use for that record and they may pop up later. But as fans, you can kind of chart their evolution a little bit. You can go through the discography and sort of figure it out, because usually the things are captured in a time and place. Again, to go back to the temporal confusion and fascination that I have with this band, like you say, Guy, some of these things are from potentially years ago, but you still, it feels contemporary. It still feels like a brand new band every time I put on a record. I don't really have a question there. It's an observation. Like, it's fascinating that you're able to me, like, hear a fresh thing or a thing that's fresh to my ears and not know that it might have been captured 9 years ago or something. You know what I mean? That's a little odd, isn't it?
Well, you should think in terms of geologic time.
How does
that
work?
If you expand your time reference, I mean, 3 years is really not very long at all.
That's true. It does feel that way right now. A bit of a blur in time, yeah. The only thing I wanted to get to before we maybe wrap up.
I wish George was here to ask that question, because I also think for him it must feel his relationship, you know, because where George is coming from, you know, from the folk tradition, like, you know, it's a step somewhere else, you know, as well,
yes.
Even though it's still, I think it makes 100% sense still, but, you know, must feel different.
Yeah. Well, not unlike REM. Slurs White is out of time. That was a bad joke. I'm sorry. I was referencing their album. But yeah, no, I like it. It's out of time. That's the only phrase I can think of. I really appreciate it. The one thing I wanted to ask about, Jim, and this is maybe potentially awkward. The band is billed as you two, you and George. But for my money, is it not a trio at this point? Like, do you view it as, like, without Guy, is this a thing at this point?
It's definitely the three of us.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, and in the past we've said, Guy, you should be in the title as well. And then Guy was resistant to that. And then this time it made more sense again. But then, and we were going to do that, right, Guy?
Yeah, we talked about it.
But then we realized if we're going to play a show.
Oh, right.
People are going to expect to see Guy on the stage. And, you know, that would have been, I don't think Guy was ready to get in the van.
there's never been an instrumental entry point for you here, Guy. Is that correct? You've never.
Well, we've done live film work together where I have played guitar with Jim and George in different configurations. I mean, we've done projects with Jem Cohen where we've had bands with Jessica Moss on violin and me on guitar and George on lute and Jim on drums. So we have actually made music together with me playing guitar on stage before, for sure.
Yeah, quite a bit.
But Zylurus White, you know, as a live entity is the duo,
yeah.
You know, that is the band. And that is, like, you know, there's quite, you know, for anyone who hasn't seen it, if you have the opportunity, you absolutely have to see it because it's an incredible thing to see in real time, their musicianship. And no, I don't feel like that I could step into that. It's for various reasons, but I do think that there's, you know, there's like two aspects to the band. There's the, you know, the performing unit that is Zylurus White. There's the band Zylurus White that has had some continuity together from dating way back in Jim's history. I mean, Jim and George go back as friends and people who've collaborated together, you know, even from before, you know, the first Zylurus White record was made.
Yeah.
So there's a long relationship there, but there is also something that is, you know, with these records that we've made together, which, you know, I feel very strange about being a record producer, but when I have worked with bands on records, my feeling about it is I'll go to the mat for the project. I really get invested in a very intense way, and I don't work on things that I don't have that kind of investment in, you know? And with this band, it's like I feel hugely invested in what it is, and I think it's really stretched me in a way. Like, I didn't have a grounding in a lot of the music that George comes from.
Yeah.
So for me, it was a learning curve. And a lot of it is still mysterious to me. Sometimes I'm not even sure if the song stems from a scale modality that is classical or if it's completely improvised. I don't have enough knowledge of that stuff. But I do think that it just brings another thing to the table, another perspective to the table. And I think with this band, I think I do have an ear for being able to help the process along, you know?
I mean, I've heard this about you before, Guy, that from others who've worked with you, notably the Casual Dots. You're very supportive and you're very helpful, and you're a driving force in that regard. But I don't know. There's something about this, and I feel like you've both spoken to it. But for what it's worth, like, particularly with this record, it does feel like this is a real trio collaboration.
It is. It really is. Yeah.
Yeah. So for my money, you're a trio.
Yeah.
I hereby decree.
I think we announced it like that in the in the publicity. Like,
it's,
you know,
true, actually.
Presenting this record.
Yeah, yeah. It did say Slurris White and Guy Picciotto present. Yeah, you're absolutely correct. Yeah. I got that from Drag City. Anyway, a little bit of semantics, but I just wanted to clarify it because I find this all very fascinating, as you both know.
We just didn't want to hustle anybody if they think there's going to be guitar playing and, you know, hijinks of that nature on the record, because there's not. So it's like, it's just a matter of nomenclature. But I think I've always felt comfortable with what, you know, we talked about it, and I think we ended up in the place that makes the most rational sense in terms of how to present what the record is.
It reminds me of the press releases I've seen from the 60s that said the Beatles and George Martin present Revolver. No, I'm just kidding. no, but it does feel that way to me. Like, this feels like...
Well, hopefully closer to George Martin than Murray the K, you know, like whatever, you're going to have to pick between those two.
No, it's wonderful. And I appreciate that you were able to make such a beautiful record under very strange circumstances. So I want to ask kind of what's next questions. So Guy, you're sitting on piles and piles of stuff. Because you have so much stuff, are you ever not thinking about what's next in terms of this band in particular?
It's funny. I actually found the one email where I was like, where we started talking about, like, what should the, you know, it was in 2021. Like, we'd been working on these film projects. We'd been working on just various things. And it was like, what is the brief for the next record? And I kind of, like, you know, wrote out a, like, a idea of, like, what do we need to look for? What are the parameters for this record? So that kind of focused the attention. I mean, I've been through these archives a lot. It's like, there's a lot of stuff in there, but at this point I feel like we need to build a new archive. And I'm really hoping that at some point I can be in the room with George and Jim at the same time. I mean, there really is, that is a special, experience, you know, and I think it would be wonderful to see, to be able to do that again. So hopefully what happened to George? Like, did a bomb drop on, like, where did, has he tried to come back into the chat? Do you know?
Well, I assume Jim hasn't been able to text him because his phone is occupied. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I put my phone on, airplane mode or something.
Let me see. Did he write me? No, he didn't. But
I'm sorry. He might.
But, you know, probably the internet does go out there.
It was getting a little dodgy, I thought, or spotty at various points. I don't know if you guys...
Yeah, did you see how it was like...
It was doing some
strobe,
flashing?
Like a strobe thing where we were appearing in his square, and I was like, oh no, some sort of...
Yeah, that's a good point.
Something's going on. My point was going to be... sorry, Guy, that thing you just described of hopefully all being in the same room, is there talk of that? Mm. Is there a plan?
Well, Slurris White are supposed to be starting a tour next week where they're starting to play shows. They're playing the Big Ears Festival, and they're supposed to be playing here in New York. So, I mean, I don't know if there's going to be any extra time to get together and do something, but that would be wonderful. But, I mean, it does feel there's a hope in the air. I mean, I think there's a more promising future for that kind of potential. I hope so. You know?
Okay, great. That's.
Oh, look, George had a lightning strike. There's no electricity.
Oh, you got a message.
Is that what happened?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I said, lightning in a bottle? Maybe that's what prompted it. I conjured this. I'm sorry. I love George. I miss him. That was my fault. I'm sorry. Jim, Guy alludes to the fact that you have tour dates. That's exciting. Is it extensive? Are you going whole hog as you usually do?
No. We've got Montreal, Los Angeles, Big Ears, Philadelphia, New Haven, and New York.
Okay. And then you'll see what happens. It's still a bit weird out there, I think, right? To tour?
Yeah, I think it is, actually. And we'll just, hopefully we'll do some more, you know, we want to go up to Chicago at some point. And hopefully we'll do some more, but we don't have that worked out yet.
Okay, fair enough. Now, the record's out on Drag City, so I can cite that. If people want to learn more about... both of you, let's go on the internet. Jim, where can people go to learn more about Slurris White?
Oh, slurriswhite.com.
Easy. That's easy. And I can link to that in the podcast description. No problem there. That's great. Tour dates.
And if people are interested in the Rebecca Marshall, Forrest and Me film, they can Google Rebecca E. Marshall, the Forrest and Me film, and that will take you to her website where she talks about the film. And we're hoping that within a year or so, it should be out. And we're also, when the complete video clips for this Forrest and Me album are done, there's going to be a compilation of those films as well. So there'll be lots of kind of visual stuff. And the record itself is coming out in April, I believe. right? April.
That's correct. It's out on, you guys are brandishing vinyl copies of them and showing them off in my face. That's great. I want to get one of those. All of you have them.
It's on Drag City for the rest, for the most of the world. But if you're a listener, if you have listeners in Australia and New Zealand, it's on Remote Control Records.
Oh, okay, cool.
This is their version.
We do have some listeners out there. So hello. And now you know, Remote Control Records. That's great. All right. Well, that's excellent. Now, if we can go out. Oh, sorry, Guy.
Yes.
Are you on the internet? Are you online? Do you do things online?
I keep up with my sports team and I I exchange emails with you, Vish, occasionally.
That's right. Emails and texts sometimes about sports. Yes. Are you, you don't have a presence of some kind or are you hiring?
I have no presence on the internet. I try to keep my presence as minimal as possible in the minute because I find I don't have enough time to tend to it in a way.
No, that's fair. But do you like, sorry, I'm just going to have, this is plug time. Mm. Are you actively looking for people to seek you out as a producer or recording engineer or anything like that? Or does it just happen when it happens?
I'm not actively looking for that because there's groups of people that I work with now that kind of, I have a limited bandwidth of availability in terms of trying to balance my parenting and musician stuff. But occasionally, I mean, I'm always up for checking out new music and stuff like that, but I don't have a shingle out for that. And since it's in my house, I can't actually be that loud here. So there's not I can't do a lot of super loud recording. So that kind of limits what I can do. So
fair enough. I just wanted to give you the opportunity to shoot me down or plug something. And I appreciate that.
Yeah. I don't think I shot you down, but
No, you didn't. But I feel like I wish I was less online myself. And that's all I was getting at. I wish I could do less. And I thought we were all heading that way with Twitter's implosion. And then I was like, good. I feel obligated to do it. Anyway, this is not about me. I just want to wrap this up. I'll figure out my own psychological issues. Yes, Jim, you were going to say something?
Yes. I made a mailing list for shows because to try to actually get off the people that don't want to be on the social media.
Yeah.
And So my friend built me something, and it's jimwhitedrums.com. It's a website, and then on it is supposed to be my – I haven't sent one out yet. But I will.
That's
it. The dates.
I have one of those too. I have a newsletter and I can't keep up with it. I don't know what's wrong with us. We're all so busy.
I guess it's like kind of like, you know, because, you know, how do you find about shows but without going on social media, right?
Yeah. You're on the Instagram as Jim White Drums, right, Jim?
Yeah.
Okay. So people can go there. I'll link to all these things. Okay, gentlemen, before we go, I want to go out on a song from The Forest and Me. Guy, I think you've heard this happen on the show before. Because I have two people, there could be a debate. I'm going to go to one of you to pick. The other one has veto power.
Hey, can I suggest something different, Vish?
Oh, yes.
I thought about this today, but I thought George was going to be here too. So I thought with the four of us, we could do this thing where each of us picks a number between 1 and 5. And then we add the numbers together. And if the number's even, that person who is the even person decides. If it's odd, that other person decides. And if it's a prime, the third person decides.
You thought about this today, like furthering and complicating the bureaucracy?
I know you have this thing that you do, and I was like, I don't like the whole veto thing. I find it uncomfortable, and I thought it would be cool to do something involving numbers and randomness. So,
well, the veto thing is as you have maybe heard also, generally there's consensus. There's very little debate. People are like, you know what? That's a good idea. That's all. It's a bit of a joke. So,
yeah.
Okay, well, how do you propose? Do you really want to do this? We can do it. You pick then. You tell us how to do it.
I'll count to three, and then we each hold up a finger, one, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Then we'll add the numbers together. If the number's even, Jim will pick the song. If the number is odd, I will pick the song. If the number is a prime, you, Vish, will pick the song.
Okay, sounds good. All right, everybody, you're going to count? You're going to count this down?
Yep. Okay. 1, 2, 3. All right, so we have 7, 9. So 9 is odd, and is 9 a prime? No, it's not. So that means I get to decide.
Fair enough. This is revolutionizing this part of my show, but fine. Go for it.
Well, I gave all the thought to the idea, and now I haven't given any thought at all to what song to pick.
But I'm trying to make it normal.
I'm going to pick Missing Heart because it's one of my favorite pieces of music that, like I said, it was one of these things where they started playing it and there is a missing heart to this song because I wasn't able to turn on the tape until I did. And it was, there's this beautiful verse that's somewhere out in the ether, like circulating, that it doesn't exist. But the part I did capture is one of my most favorite memories of these guys playing. It's like they sat down, we had played not a note. They had not even tuned. They hadn't done anything. They just went into this piece of music just from the beginning before I'd even set any levels or anything. And wow. It's just one of those magic pieces of music that I've always loved it, and I love it on this record.
Well, that's very well put. I appreciate that. I didn't realize that. By verse, by the way, you mean instrumentally, not there wasn't singing or something. There weren't lyrics.
No. It was okay. An instrumental, but it was like, it was a passage of music maybe for like a minute. And then by the time I was able to get the levels up and hit the button, but nice. Amazingly, it comes in on a very musical entry point. So, yeah.
Okay. Jim, did you not veto, not anything else? Did you want to say anything about that particular tune before we hear?
I had an even number.
Well, that's true. So
I'm out.
Just out? You get eliminated from even talking about it? Okay, that's fine. This is Missing Heart by Sluris White from their beautiful new album, The Forest and Me. Jim, Guy, George, who's not here, thank you so much for being on the show again. I hope you enjoyed this. I really appreciate it. And I hope we speak again, and best luck in the future.
Thank you, Vish.
Thank you, Vish.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
A very lovely and beautiful band that Sluris White is. I'm so thrilled to have Jim and George and Guy back on the show. Sorry again for those of you hoping to hear from George at the end with nature called. Wait, that made it sound like he had to go to the bathroom. The thunder and the lightning called and we lost. You heard what happened. That was weird. But anyway, I hope you enjoyed that conversation. Thank you for listening to it. And thanks again to all of them for appearing on this show, which happens to be the 768th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available almost wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you're looking for, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com and like Creative Control on Facebook or follow the show currently on Twitter at @vishcreative, or you can follow me directly on Twitter and on Instagram at @vishkana. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain this podcast. That is the primary source of clean revenue for this podcast. So if you like the show and you want to support it, that would be great. $6 American or more a month grants you access to exclusive content. You get the episodes earlier than everybody else. You get bonus content. If you're interested in receiving a Creative Control t-shirt, just message me on Patreon and I'll get you one while supplies last. You don't have to donate $6, by the way. It can be any amount you want. Some people do less, some people do more, some people adjust based on their budgets or whatever. It's nice. It's good. You could. I appreciate it. If you have the means, please support the show on Patreon. It means a lot. Thank you. Speaking of thanks, thanks to Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton for their in-kind support for this show. As always, thanks to my friend Jim Guthrie for lending me some music of his for this show. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you so much for listening to this episode featuring Jim and George and Guy talk about Silurus White. I hope you'll check out all of their albums. They're wonderful. I love them so much. I've seen them live several times. They're the best. And this new record's really lovely. And it's available via Drag City. So thanks to the people at Drag City for facilitating this. And that's it. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you're doing well. I'll talk to you soon, I hope. I mean, this way. Maybe not. You may not talk to me. You could. You could talk to me right now. Maybe you're talking to me right now. Should I listen? I feel like I'm doing all the talking. Anyway, I'm going to go and end this weirdness right now. Thanks again. Talk to you soon. I mean, you know what I mean. Bye for now.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.